Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Tes Zayin. We are in Tes Vav Amud Beis. We are at the two dots, about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. And we are going to talk today about Kli Zechuche. So a couple of other topics coming up in today's daf, but primarily all of Amud Aleph and a little bit of Amud Beis is dedicated to the topic of Kli Zechuche, and that is glassware. Glassware is a material that the Torah itself does not describe, and so the Chachamim were given the task of giving it definition. It could fall under one of two categories. It could either be Kli Matches or it could be Kli Cheres. And that obviously makes a huge difference in terms of the halachas of Tum and Tahara. And just to go over some of the basics regarding between earthenware and metalware. So let's just articulate some of the most basic differences so that we understand that wherever we put glassware is going to make a very big difference in terms of the halacha of how we're going to define it from a Tumah and Tahara standpoint. For a moment before we begin, why are we here? Meaning we're learning Masechta Shabbos and we're in the first Perek. So how do we get over here to discussing glassware as a principal topic of today's Shir? So this goes back to the Gemara in Yudal Amud Beis. The Gemara in Yudal Amud Beis talked about Gzeros. A couple of Gzeros are actually here in the Mishnayos and Shabbos. Delousing a garment on Shabbos. Reading by candlelight on Friday night. These are gzeres, the Rabbanan. These are part of the 18, the Yudches Davar. The 18 gzeres that were voted and decided upon in the addict. And so the Gemara, having gone through those two, so the Gemara goes through a number of others. Ultimately, when all said and done, we're going to be going through most of the 18 in the course of our sugya. And the sugya began with the Mishnah on Yudges Amud Beis. The Mishnah, Elu min ha'alachu sh'amu ba'aliyas Chananya ben Chizkiya ben Garon. These are some of the halachos. The Mishnayos themselves do not go through the actual Yudches Davar, but the Gemara uses the opportunity to go through it. And if you look on Yudalid Amud Aleph, so the Mishnayos over there, the Braisos over there take us through a number of other gzeros that were enacted as well. Meaning as long as we were on the topic of enactments that were made by earlier Tanaim, obviously Shammai and Hillel, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel were earlier Tanaim, so therefore, they went over a number of other gzeros that were enacted also by earlier tonight. And if you go to Yudal Amud Beis, so there, we did this daf just a couple of days ago. So we explored a couple of other gzeros that were instituted by earlier tonight. And if you look at the Braisa that we cited right in the middle of Yudal Amud Beis, Yosi ben Yoezri, Shreda, and Yosi ben Yochanan, and Yushalayim made a gzera on Tumas Eretz HaAmim, which was most of yesterday's daf, we discussed it in detail, and also on Kli Zechuches, meaning that they labeled Kli Zechuches to be something which is a Dover Hatame. It becomes susceptible to Tumah, and obviously it can transmit the Tumah. With all that stated, now we get to go to our daf and our discussion, and that is that when the Chachamim labeled the Tumah, so which Tumah did they label? Did they give it the status of Kli Matachos, or did they give it the status of Kli Cheres? Now, in order to appreciate what the differences are going to be, so let's just go over some of the basics. When it comes to a kli mateches, a metal utensil, so it's going to become, it's susceptible to tuma. It could become tame both on the inside and on the outside. It can become tame even if it doesn't have a toch, even if it doesn't have an interior, meaning let's say it's a flatware, it's still going to be susceptible to tuma. Resolution of the tuma, the way that it becomes tahor is by toveling it in the mikvah. And see, these are just some of the basic core principles of Tumah Tahara as it relates to metal. When it comes to earthenware, Kli Cheres, so the halacha is that it only becomes Tumah on the inside, not from the outside. There is no option of toveling in the mikvah once it becomes Tameh. The only way to resolve the Tumah, to relieve it of its Tumah, is only to break it into a point where it is now dysfunctional. So some of the most basic differences between a Kli Matches and a Kli Cheres. And so now the question is that the Chachamim now have this quote-unquote new material called glass, and the Chachamim now want to give it the status of Tumah. They want to give it a Tumah de Rabbanan, that it becomes susceptible to Tumah, and also that it can transfer Tumah to another item. And now the question becomes, which category do they put it under? Do they put it under metalware, or do they put it under earthenware? Now, in terms of, we'll see the Gemara inside, but if we just think this outside for just a moment, so what is its characteristic? Well, its chief characteristic is its composition. How is it made? And it's made out of sand that is heated up. So in that regard, you could certainly make the argument that's much like earthenware. Earthenware obviously is made up of the ground. and made up of materials, ground materials that are also going to be shape molded and then heated up. So in that regard, glassware is much like earthenware. On the other hand, in terms of its functionality, so the Gemara is going to point out that in that regard, it behaves more similar to that of metalware than that of earthenware. And so it's not as porous as earthenware. And if it breaks, so there is a way of reheating it and fixing it. Obviously not as easily as metal, but still there's that option. So as we're going to see, it becomes a bit of a confusion, a little bit messy in terms of which category did the Chachamim put it in. And so we start with the Gemara. We are on Tezvav Amud Beis, and we are about a dozen lines from the bottom at the two dots. So why did the Chachamim enact Tumah when it comes to the metal utensil? So Rav Yochanan is quoted as saying that because its original construction is made out of sand, just like Kli Cheres is also made out of earth, so therefore the Chachamim fashioned it and gave it the characteristics of Kli Cheres. So the Gemara says, now if this is in fact true, so why then, or let's see together, what exactly are the halachas that we know regarding tumah and glass? Elamiyata lo tehelam tara b'mikvah. So the Gemara says, first of all, if this is correct, that the tumah d'rabban, and that's on glassware, is going to be designed just like earthenware, so then obviously there should be no mikvah option. But the Gemara points out, but we know there is a mikvah option. Alama tanan. We have a mishnah in mikvahos. And the Mishnah reads, Ve'eluchotzitzim b'kelim, and this is going to be a chatzitza on kelim hazefes v'hamor b'kli zechuchis. That if I have either pitch or some other very sticky material that's on glass, that will be a chatzitza, and so therefore I can't tovel it in the mikvah. And so the starting assumption of this Mishnah in mikvahs is that glassware can be toveled in the mikvah, and it's just a question of what is going to serve as a chatzitza. Interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says that your typical mud is not going to be a chatzitza on glassware, because the glassware is very, very smooth, and most of the dirt is just going to fall right off of it. So you need something that is extraordinarily adhesive, which will serve as a chatzitza. But anyway, comes out now that we're talking about putting in the mikvah. Now, if the kli zechuchis is going to be modeled after kli cheres, so then what's the discussion we're having all together? It shouldn't go into the mikvah. It shouldn't be no tahara b'mikvah. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says that the Mishnah here in Mikvos is talking about a very specific case, notably that it was glassware, and it developed a huge hole somewhere in the bottom, and the hole was plugged. And how was the hole plugged? So some hot lead was poured right into the base where the hole was, and so basically metal was used to plug in that hole. And Rav Meir he, and the Mishnah in Mikvos is going like the Shita of Rav Meir, the Amar Akoho Lechachar Mamid. In terms of giving a Kli definition, so if the base of the Kli, if the plug of the Kli is metal, so then status-wise the entire Kli is going to be called now a metal Kli, even though the majority of the Kli is glass, but because the Ma'amid, that which is holding it together, is metal, so therefore its entire Kli is going to be designed and defined as metal. The time the Gemara quotes the Brisa, Kli Zechuchis, Shenikva V'Itiv L'Tochan Eiver, that if I have glass where it has a hole in it, and hot lead was melted into that hole so that it serves as a plug. So Amar Shimon Gamliel, Reb Meir Metameh V'Chachamim Metarim. So Reb Meir says that it's Tameh, and the Chachamim say that's Tahor. And so that means that according to Reb Meir, it's a Mamid. And because it's a Mamid, so therefore we're going to treat it like metal. So the Mishnah Mikvos is going according to the sheet of Reb Meir, and the Mishnah Mikvos is talking about this very limited circumstance in which it's not glass by itself. It's glassware that got punctured and was plugged with metal. And the sheet of Reb Meir is that we follow the Mamid in terms of its definition, and that's the Mishnah in Mikvos. But if it was Tam, just a regular, glassware, so it wouldn't be subject to the mikvah because glass is not subject to the mikvah. Interesting over here in this brisa that we just quoted. So Reb Meir says that it's tameh, and the Chachamim say that it's tahor. Now, when the Chachamim say that it's tahor, now it happens not to be the focus right now of our discussion, but when the Chachamim say that it's tahor, what exactly are they saying? Meaning, it is now a functional kli. Do they mean to say that it's tahor legamre? That's a little bit difficult. So there is a tosos on the bottom of this amud on Tezvav Amud Beis that discusses exactly what is the shita of the Chachamim and where exactly are the Chachamim stand on this utensil. Please see Tosos for that discussion. We're going to go on. Elamiata. As now we turn to the top of Tezvayin Amud Aleph. Loli Tami Migamban. So the Gemara says, so now, if we're saying that really glassware is, by definition, earthenware, so that means that it should not be subject to Tumah if the Tumah comes into contact with the exterior of the glassware. And because, as we've said in the introduction, when it comes to earthenware only becomes Tameh from the interior airspace. You don't need the Tumah, the Ava Tumah, to come into contact with anything interior, but it needs to go into the Toch, into the airspace, into the interior airspace. If, let's say, you had an Ava Tumah, let's say a Sheretz, for example, and it came into contact with the surface area, the external, exterior surface area of the Kli Cheres, the Kli Cheres does not become Tameh. This is just one of the most basic rules as it relates to a Kli Cheres. We're going to see the Mishnah in Kalim in just a moment. And so now, if glassware is going to be following the construct of earthenware, so then the same halacha should apply, in that it should not become tumah if the tumah comes into contact with the exterior. And what we're going to learn together is that seemingly that's not true. And the Gemara is bothered by the fact that it should be true. So let's take a look at a couple of Mishnahs together. The Mishnah here, Alamat Tanan, we're learning a Mishnah in Kalim. This is the first Mishnah of the second parak of Kalim. Kli Cheres or Kli Neser. That when it comes to earthenware or Kli Neser, some other type of mineral that is also given the status of earthenware. So Tum'asim Shava. So in terms of the Tumah, there's going to be equal, which is Mitamim Mitam'in Me'avirehem. So in terms of contracting Tumah and then transferring the Tumah to another item, everything is done by the interior airspace of it. Umitamim Me'achorehem. And also, if let's say, for example, there's another hollow somewhere in the earthenware jug. Let's say, for example, if you could just picture in your mind a goblet, where obviously it has the main hollow is the cup that's on the top. But if you were to flip the goblet over, so you can envision that on the base, assuming that's a hollow base, so that also could serve as an interior airspace. So when the Mishnah here in Kalim is describing the Achorehem, it's talking about other interior airspaces that exist within the Kli. Umitamim me'achorehem, the ein mitamim migabehem. And then the Mishnah Kalim tells us, but if it's any part of the external side of the Kli Cheres, and the Tumah comes into contact with the external side of the Kli Cheres is not mekabel Tumah. Ushvirasan mitarasan. And also, how do you resolve the Tumah? How do you remove the Tumah from the Kli Cheres? And the only way Shvira is only by breaking it. Okay? So this is the Mishnah in Kalim that gives us the most basic definitional points regarding Tumah and Tahara when it comes to Kli Cheres. Fine. Now, Kli Neser Kli Cheres u de Tumasan Shava. Ava Midach Rinan Lo. Now, the Mishnah here in Kalim is giving us, seemingly, an exhaustive list of those items that share these characteristics. And that is, it says Kli Cheres and it says Kli Neser. Now, if Kli Zechuchas also followed along the same lines, shouldn't the Mishnah in Kalim, when given the examples of Kli Cheres and Kli Neser, so the Mishnah in Kalim also should have said Kli Zechuchas as well. And yet the Mishnah in Kalim did not give this as an example. Why didn't the Mishnah in Kalim include Kli Zechuchas? Gemara's response. Amri kevim dechini shtabru yeshlam takana shavinu kikli matchos. So the Gemara now gives us a wrinkle in the entire way to look at glassware, and that is the following. That really, let's start off with where we have discussed up until now. That when it comes to glassware is going to follow the general characteristic of earthenware. They're both produced from the earth, they're both produced from the ground, and so therefore, fundamentally, glassware is going to be like earthenware. However, because in terms of function, so glassware does have a similarity to metalware. And the Gemara, the way the Gemara just articulated, Kaven dinishtabru, if the glassware breaks, yeshlem takana. So there is a way to fix it. By earthenware, there is no way to fix it. In other words, by earthenware, you basically have to crumble it up, start again, and reshape it and refire it in the furnace. However, when it comes to glassware, the Gemara speaks about this idea where it can be fixed. So therefore, in that regard, the Chachamim gave it also the characteristic of metal. And just like metal is tameh both from the interior and the exterior, so when it comes to glassware, it's going to become tameh from both the interior and the exterior. Elamiyato yapsul tumasim yishanan kikli matro. So the Gemara says, okay. So if you're telling me now that when it comes to glassware, it fundamentally is going to have the characteristics of earthenware, but it's also going to have the characteristics of metal as well, because functionality-wise, it does behave like metal. So the Gemara says, so let's impose a stringency that we have regarding metalware, and let's apply it now to glassware. And that is the idea of Tumah Yishana. Now, Tumah Yishana by metalware goes like this. Let's say we have a metal kli that's Tumah, and it was broken. So we break it to the point of disuse, and then we fix it. So, mi ikra, then according to the strict letter of the law, what should now become of that metalware? So, it should be tahor legamre. Meaning, once it's broken to the point of disuse, and now you fixed it. So, basically, panim chadoshos balakan, it's a new entity. However, as we're going to learn on the Amud Beis of today's daf, the chachamim slapped a tuma de rabbanan. Meaning, once it is now going to be used as it once was previously, even though it was broken, and even though mi ikra din min atorah, the tumah went away, nevertheless, what the Chachamim did is that they basically gave its old tuma and recreated the old tuma, reintroduced the old tuma, so that now the tuma is still there, and the only way now to resolve the tuma is by toveling in the mikvah. For reasons which we're going to articulate why the Chachamim made such a gzera, we'll discuss that on the Amud Beis. But in the meantime, however, this is a stringency imposed on metalware, on kli matachos. So the Gemara's question now becomes, is that if we're treating glassware l'chumra, like metalware, so let's also give it the chumra of this tumah yishana. Ditnan, and now the Gemara just is going to quote the Mishnah that speaks to this idea of tumah yishana. We are also back in the Mishnah in Kalim. This is the beginning of the 11th parak of Kalim. Kli matchos, when it comes to metal, pshutem mekableim tameim. So when it comes to metal, so both the flatware and the hollowware of metal are going to be susceptible to tumah. Nishbaru taru. Now, if it's broken, so the tumah goes away. Chazer va'asameim kelim. But once you fix it and bring it back to the status of a functional kli, chazru l'tumasam yishana. So here, this Mishnah in Kelim introduces us to the idea of tumah yishana, that the tumah that it once had when previously before broken is now going to continue and perpetuate even after you fixed it. This is not me'ikar adin. This is not according to the Torah. This is a chumra de rabban that was imposed. And again, the reason why, we'll discuss later this morning. Now, when it comes to kli zechuchos, it happens to be that we know that kli zechuchos, that glassware, does not have this chumra of tumah yishana. How do I know that? It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Kalim. Kli eitz, kli or, kli etzim, kli zechuchos. So when it comes to any kli made out of wood, or leather, or bone, or glass, pshutem tahorim. So if it's pashut, if it is flatware, it's going to be tahor. Umekablem tameim, only when it's hollowware, it's going to be tameh. So this is a notable halacha as it relates to all these different materials, that it's only mekabel tumah when it has a toch. Nishbaru, taharu. If you break them, they're tahor. Chazavasamem kelem mekabel tumah mekanalaba. And the Mishnah Kalim says that once you fix them to become kelim once again, so the tumah that went away does not come back. And the Mishnah over here says very clearly that there is no idea of tumah yishana. And the Gemara just simply spells it out, mikan laba in lemafrei lo. The tumah is only from this point going forward. In other words, it becomes susceptible to tumah, but the old tumah before it was broken does not come back once again. And so the Mishnah here in Kalim is very clear that when it comes to glassware, it does not have the stringency of tumah yishana. And so now let's reset the question of the Gemara. If the idea of glassware is that even though it is like earthenware and that's made out of, it's made out of the ground, made out of the material of the ground, so the fundamentally the tumah is going to be like kli cheres, but because from a functional standpoint, it does behave a little bit like metalware in that if it breaks, you can fix it. So therefore the Chachamim imposed the stringencies that we have regarding metal and impose that on glass. Notably, we said by metal, it's metame both interior and exterior. And by glass, it's metame both interior and exterior. So why don't we also give it the chumra of tumah yishana? That's the Gemara's question, and the Gemara now is going to respond. Tumah kli zechuchos derabanan. This idea that glassware to begin with is susceptible to tumah, that already starts off only on a din derabanan. As we learned, this is a gzera derabanan. It goes back to the first of the zugos. They're the ones who first enacted it. So the idea that the glassware becomes tameh to begin with is a din derabanan. And on top of that, tumah yishana derabanan. And this idea that Tumah Yishana, that if I break a kli and then fix it, and the old Tumah comes back, so that's a din derabbanan. So b'tumah deraisa achisa be'rabbanan tumah, b'tumah derabbanan lo achisa le'rabbanan tumah. And so this Tumah derabbanan of Tumah Yishana is only going to be imposed on something which me'ikar hadin is a Tumah deraisa. But it's not going to be imposed on something which me'ikar hadin is a Tumah derabbanan. It's basically similar to the idea of in gozrin gzera l'gzera. It's a compound gzera, and we won't go that far. It's similar in idea. So, comes out now from the Gemara, is that the reason why Tumah Yishana is not imposed on glass is because glass is mid-derabbanan to begin with, and Tumah Yishana is derabbanan, and we won't compound one on top of the other. The Gemara still pushes on this point, pshutei mi'al itame, da'a pshutei kli matchos daraisa ninu. So the Gemara says, so, if in fact we're saying now that when it comes to glassware, so it is its tumah is going to be fundamentally like kli cheres, but because its functionality is that of metal, so therefore it's imposed a chumrah on metal, notably, just like metal's metame both interior and exterior, so too glassware is going to be metame both interior and exterior. So the Gemara says, so why don't we give it the other chumrah of metal? What would be the other chumrah of metal? And that would be that metal is tame both when it is hollow and when it's flat. And so why don't we say the same thing regarding glass? It's tame both when it's hollow and when it's flat as well. And we know that glassware is only tame when it's hollow, not when it's a flat. So the Gemara's response to that is, kli matchos deraisa ninu, avde berabanan hekera ki hechdelo lisrof alayu tshumos v'kachim. So the Gemara says, look, it's true that the Chachamim could have imposed that chumrah, that the glassware should become tame both when it's hollowware and when it's flatware. The reason why the Chacham didn't want to do that is because they wanted to make a notable distinction between the tumah of glass and the tumah of metal. And the reason being is that the Chacham wanted us to know that this is a tumah derabbanan, not a tumah daraisa. And so therefore, by putting an anomaly into the halachas of tumah, so the Chacham are thereby reminding us, all this works only, of course, if we know the halachas of tumah, but by putting an anomaly in the halachos, the Chachamim are tapping us on the shoulder and reminding us, this is not a Tumah Deraisa, but it's only Tumah Derabanan. What difference does it make? So the Gemara spelled it out. And I'm just spelling out the Gemara. The difference now is going to be that if it's a Tumah Deraisa and Truma were to come into contact with it, so what do? You burn the Truma. But if it only be a Tumah Derabanan and Truma comes into contact with it, the Truma is left in a state of suspension. You don't burn the Truma, you don't eat the Truma. The Truma is nitle. But the Truma is not going to be burnt. Now you remember as recently as yesterday's daf, there were a number of circumstances where the Truma was a derabbanan and you burn the Truma. Rashi here on the bottom of our Amud writes, those are exceptional cases. There are six exceptional cases where Truma is going to be burnt even though it came into contact with the Truma derabbanan. But the starting point of any discussion of Truma derabbanan is that generally I will not burn the Truma if Truma comes into contact with Tumah Derabanan. And so by the Chachamim putting in an irregularity in the halachas of Tumah, so the Chachamim are reminding us that the Tumah is only Tumah Derabanan, not Tumah Daraisa. Okay. And all this brings us now to the Amud Beis, and all we have now covered approach number one. And approach number one admittedly is a complicated approach, meaning that the Chachamim slapped a Tumah on glass, so that glass is susceptible to Tumah. That we all agree upon. And it's not just a question of what characteristics are this glass going to have. It's going to be like earthenware, or is it going to be like metal? Is it like licheris, or is it like matachos? And so the first approach is that somewhere in the middle. It's a hybrid of the two. It fundamentally will behave like licheris, but are given a chumra like klimatchos because functionally it behaves like a klimatchos. And so therefore it is some sort of hybrid approach, but within this hybrid approach there's a lot of explaining that needs to be done, which we did over the course of the Amud Aleph. Why doesn't it have all the chumras that a metal kli have? And why does it not have Tumah Yishana? Why isn't it applied to both flatware and to hollowware? So there is a lot of explaining to do, but that first approach basically is that glass is somewhere of a hybrid between earthenware and metal. The second approach of the Gemara, which we're starting right now on the Amud Beis, on the top of the Amud, is Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi Amar Olam L'Kli Cheres Damu. No. Really, the Tumah Derabbanan that was imposed on glass is going to be following principally and exclusively like Kli Cheres. So that means to say that according to Rav Ashi, pretty much the entire discussion that we had in the Amud Aleph becomes a moot point, because there is no way in which the glass is going to be modeled after metal. It's only going to be modeled after earthenware. And so therefore, all the halachas are going to be following like that of earthenware. But there is, according to Rav Ashi, one point of explanation that is necessary. And as far as what was our question that led us into the lengthy discussion of the Amud Aleph, is Lolan Tami Migaban. So the Gemara's question was, is that Kli Zechuchis, that glassware, is Tami both on the interior and on the exterior, which engendered the entire discussion on the Amud Aleph. But Rav Ashi says, you know what? Let's not have that entire discussion. Let's just simply say like this. It really is earthenware. And that means that principally, it does follow all the rules of earthenware, like we learned already. And in terms of this one particular, what looks like an anomaly, in that it becomes tummy both on the interior and on the exterior, that's something specific to glass. Why? Why is glass going to become tummy both when the tumah comes into contact with the interior and the exterior? So the Gemara gives a really interesting explanation. Ho'ol v'nira tochul kibara. Because when it comes to glassware, glassware is obviously see-through. That's the nature of glass, is you can see right through it. And so therefore, because the interior can be seen from the exterior, so even though the Chachamim gave it the halachas of Kli Cheres, but when it comes to Kli Cheres, actual Kli Cheres, you can't see the interior from the exterior. The material itself is extraordinarily thick and opaque, and you cannot see from one side to the other. But when it comes to the glassware, since you can see the interior from the exterior, so the Chachamim therefore extended the Tumah so that when a Davar HaTameh touches the exterior, it's Ki'ilu, it's touching the interior, and that's why it's going to become Tameh even when the Tumah is coming into contact from the exterior. That is the Gemara's explanation, as Rav Ashi's explanation. So in one regard, it is a much simpler approach. Because according to Rav Ashi now, we're basically saying that glass is like earthenware, with only one point of explanation, and he gives a svara in terms of why, by glassware, is it betame from the exterior, and that's not true by Kli Cheres, and he gives an explanation why that should be. But in regards to just conceptually, it is a much simpler approach in that you no longer have this hybrid of glasses, both like Kli Cheres and like metal. Continuing in the Gemara, we are now going through other gzeras that we learned on Yudal Amud Beis. On Yudal Amud Beis, we learned of some of the older gzeras. So we just went through the gzera of Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. And the Gemara now quotes other gzeras that we learned on Yudal Amud Beis. Shimon Meshetach Tikin Ksuva L'Isha. So Shimon Meshetach instituted the Ksuva. Simple reading, by the way, of the Gemara, I could have made this point back on Yudal Amud Beis as well, is that the Ksuva institution is not a Din D'Oraisa, but rather a Din D'Rabbanan. Ksuva D'Oraisa, Ksuva D'Rabbanan is a major sugya. Happens to be that this is not the main source of this, and we're not going to discuss it with any kind of depth, but it sounds like for the simple reading of our Gemara here in Shabbos, both on Yudal Amud Beis and on Tazayin Amud Beis, is that it is a rabbinic institution, the entire institution of Ksuva, and that point is open to a very, very large debate. In the meantime, we're just going to continue. V'gazotumah al kli matchos. So the Gemara says, and they made a gzeratumah on metal, to which the Gemara immediately reacts with the obvious question. Klimatrichos daraisa nenu. Metal kli becoming tamei? That's a din daraisa. What do you mean that's a gzera derabanan? Dechsev ach esazav esakesef. So how can it be when the pasuk says very clearly that metal is in fact something that is going to be subject to tuma mina Torah? So the nitzrucha ela tumi yishana. So the Gemara says no. As far as what the din derabanan is that was introduced by Shemin ben Shetach, it's the tuma yishana that we just got done discussing on the Amud Aleph. The idea that when you have a metal kli, and you break the metal kli, where it's now broken to the point of disuse, and so now if it was tummy, the tumah goes away, because tumah is only on a kli that is a functional kli, and then what happens is that you solder the kli, and you fix it. So, me ikar hadin, it is now a tahor kli. Nevertheless, the Chachamim slapped a tumah derabanan, what's called tumah yishana, and that whatever historically the tumah was there before it was broken is now going to just simply come back once again. This is the idea of tumah yishana. Dam Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Ma'aseh b'Shaltzion Hamalka. There was a story with Shaltzion the queen. Shaltzion the queen is the sister of Shimon ben Shetach. We just got done discussing this in Brachos in the seventh perek, where over there, by the way, she was not identified by name. Here in our Gemara, she's identified by name. Where the Gemara over there says that her husband Yanai HaMelech killed off Chachme Yisrael, and and he needed to bench. It was a strange gemara to say the least. And he needed to bench, and he needed someone to bench for him. And so his wife said, "Look, I'll bring in somebody to bench, but you just have to make me the simple promise that you won't kill him." Okay, admittedly a strange gemara, and then the entire back and forth between Shimon HaMeshetach and Yanai HaMelech, as Shimon HaMeshetach was not afraid of Yanai HaMelech at all. Anyway, coming now back to our discussion here, so there was a story with Shalsina Malkashas HaMishal Livna, and she made a big party for her son, V'ninmu Kol Keleha, and what happened was that the Kelim becomes Tamei, and now she has to go through the process of being Matara Kelim. Vishavra son, so what did she do? So for her, it was more expedient, and look, for her, she had all the resources in the world, she was a queen. But it was much more expedient for her to just simply break the kalim and then fix them. And that would be more expedient than toveling them all in the mikvah. Now, when I say expedient, it comes expedient in one of two ways. One is that it could just simply be a quicker process than toveling in the mikvah. Now, that is kind of hard to understand. Fixing them is time-consuming, but it could be expedient in that regard. But it certainly is expedient in another regard, and that's the following. If you have a kli that's tamei, and they came into contact with, let's say, for example, tumas meis. So there, in terms of how long will it take for you to be matara them, you have to go through the process of the paraduma, which is a seven-day process. If you break them and fix them, so now it's a new entity, it's panim chadoshos balakan, and they can be used now immediately. So, and certainly in terms of expedience, in terms of time, so certainly there's going to be a huge difference between a seven-day wait versus just simply breaking them and fixing them for immediate usage. So, let's just say simply say it is expedient. And so therefore, v'nasan son letzaref, she gave it to the smith, v'rit chan, And he melted it down and he fixed it again. V'asamem kelim chadashim, and they made new utensils out of the broken ones. V'amr chachamim yachzu l'tumasam yishana, and so the chachamim said that we don't want people engaging in this kind of activity, even though what they're doing is perfectly legitimate. But the chachamim said we don't favor that kind of activity, and the gemara is going to explain why in just a moment. And so therefore they enacted this Tumah Yishana. And now we learn that Tumah Yishana goes back to the period of Shimon HaMeshetach. My Tumah Mishom Geder Mechatas Naguba. So the Gemara says, now, why did they make such an enactment? So the Gemara says, because of Mechatas. Exactly for the reason which I articulated. Well, not exactly, but pretty much for the reason I articulated. And that is, imagine that if I have a Kli that comes into contact with Tumas Meis, and now I have an option of either going through the paraduma process or breaking and fixing it. So people are going to break and fix it because, as I explained, it's expedient. Now, what's going to happen is that if we go through the process of breaking and fixing it, so what may end up happening is that people will altogether forget about the procedure of the paraduma. That's what Rashi writes, Tishtakech Toras Mechatas. Now, to understand this Rashi a little bit better, it is certainly really interesting because this procedure of breaking and fixing only works as it relates to metokalim. Let's say, for example, a person comes into contact with Tumas Meis. So obviously, you don't have an option of breaking and fixing a person. Obviously, the only way that he can become Tahor is only going through the process of the Paraduma. So when Rashi says that we're going to forget about the procedure of Mechatas, it must be what Rashi means, is that we're going to forget about the procedure vis-a-vis metal kalim. That's probably how you're going to have to say pshat in Rashi. The Gemara, we're going back to the Gemara. Hanich lamand amr lo lechol ha-tumas amru elo tumas ha-meis bovad amru. Shapir. Now the Gemara says, now, it happens to be that there is a debate. And Rashi over here readily admits, he doesn't know where the debate is, but there is a debate regarding when this Tumah Yishana applies. So some are of the opinion that it applies to metal kalim and only when it comes into contact with tumas ha-meis. So the Gemara says, that's very good. So then the explanation that we gave is a perfect explanation. But there are opinions that say that this Tumah Yishana is going to apply even if the source of Tumah is not Tumas Meis. If the source of Tumah is any other source of Tumah, let's say, for example, Zav or Zava or Sheretz or Nevela or whatever other Tumah there is. So some are of the opinion that Tumah Yishana, the rabbinic enactment of Tumah Yishana, applies regardless of what the Avatumah is. And if that's true, so then the explanation that we just gave is not going to be a satisfying explanation. Amar Abayi, so the Gemara now is going to offer two other explanations. Amar Abayi, Gzera Shem Alo Yikavenu, Bechdei Taraso. So Abayi says, look, what were the Chachamim concerned about? Was we just learned you can break a kli, refix it, fix it up again, and you're back to removing the tumah. Sorry, and you're back to the tumah has been removed and it's panim chadash as balakan. Abayi says, look, what were the chachamim concerned about? Is that if we allow people to go through this process of breaking and then just simply fixing it, so they may put a break in the kli that is not the requisite shear. In other words, the Mishnayos in Kalim go over exactly how much of a break do we need in the kli in order for the tumah to go away. It has to be broken to the point of dysfunction. And Abayi says is that when we allow people to do this, what may end up happening is that the kli may not be broken to the point of total dysfunction. And so therefore, out of concern of that, so the Chachamim said, we want to disincentivize people from doing that. So therefore, we're just going to say that the breaking and fixing it does not remove the old tumah. Once you fix it, the old tumah comes back. Rava Amar, Rava gives a different explanation. Gzereshema Yomru, Tvila Bas Yoma, Olala. So the Gemara says, Rava gives a different explanation. That's as follows. When a kli comes into contact with any of the avatumas, and let's not talk about tumas meis, let's just talk about any other avatuma. So what is the tahara process regarding a kli? You tovel in the mikvah, and you also need Herif Shemesh. And so it's going to be now, even after I told them in the mikvah, it's still going to be a waiting period of time. How long a waiting period of time? So whatever it is from now until sunset. If I break and I fix it, and I can do so within the hour, within the half an hour, so then it's going to serve for me a more expedient nature. Now, let's say somebody comes over and says, can I borrow your kli? And you say, well, my kli is tameh, come back in a half an hour. And what you do is you break it, you fix it, he comes back in a half an hour, and he thanks you very much. Now, what he may think erroneously is that what did you do in that half an hour? You toveled in the mikvah. And he is then going to be led along the erroneous conclusion that all you need to do is tovel in the mikvah, and you don't need Herif Shemesh. Unbeknownst to him, what you did is you broke it and you fixed it. And so, if we allow breaking and fixing a means of removing the tumah, people will walk away thinking that what really happened is that you told them the mikvah and there's no requirement to Herif Shemesh. So basically, because of this erroneous conclusion that people will arrive at, so therefore the Chachamim instituted tumah yishana. Now the Gemara says, fine. So now we have given, Abayi and Rava have given us two reasons why the Chachamim imposed tumah yishana. Either it has to do with the fact that you may fail in breaking it properly, or because of the misperception that's given to people in terms of how exactly you got it from the point of being tummy to being tower. And people will therefore erroneously conclude that tefillah b'mikvah is all you need and you don't need Herif Shemesh. By Meinayu, the Gemara says, what would be a difference, what would be a nafkamina between these two reasons that are given? Iga Meinayu, the Gemara says, there is a difference, there are safinu mirtzaf. Let's say what happened with the kli is that the kli started off as being a hollow kli, a kli with a toch, and you broke it and you fixed it to the point where you totally reshaped and redesigned it. You basically turned it from something which was hollowware to something which was flatware. It was clear and evident that this kli now was broken and fixed. And Rashi says over here, now Rashi, to be totally honest, Rashi gives two pshatim, but I'm going to go with the Rashi second pshat because it is the one that he favors. So Ika da Amre, in the pshat that Rashi favors, so Shemelo Yikavenu Ika, so in terms of still a concern that he's not going to break it properly, so that still exists. But Shema Yomru Leika Da Minka Asiya Shinischarich Kula. As far as the misperception that's brought about, so it won't be in this case because people can obviously see that it started off as being something which was hollow and now is flanned out. So people will understand. Oh yeah, he broke it. He didn't tovel in the mikvah. But in terms of the other concern of it not being broken properly, well, obviously in this case it was broken properly, but once people have it in their mind that all I need to do is break it and fix it, so then the next time that somebody tries to break it, he might not break it to the necessary degree, and so therefore, in that case, the gzerah should still apply. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the gzerah derabban of Tumah Yishana. Before I go on, I am going to be a little bit remiss, so I'm not going to be remiss. I want to go back to the top of the Amud, And I just want to clarify one point on the very top of the Amud. Going back to glassware, so we basically talked about the nature of Tumah as it relates to glassware, and we said that there are two approaches. Either it's a hybrid, it exists somewhere between earthenware and metal. That was the Amud Aleph of today's daf. And the other option is that of Rav Ashi, is that no. Fundamentally, the glassware is going to be like earthenware. And in terms of explaining why it is that's Tameh from the exteriors is because of its clear-through nature. Good. The top Tosos on our Amud makes this point very clearly, and I would like to emphasize Tosos' point. And that is, don't confuse the Gemara's discussion regarding glassware in terms of its susceptibility to Tumah and our requirement nowadays to tovel a glass utensil in the mikvah. When we purchase a glass utensil from a non-Jew, so there is a requirement to tovel in the mikvah. And that is midrabanan. And Tosfos points out on the top of our Amud, that's according to everybody. That's according to the first approach of the Gemara, and that's even according to the Rav Ashi approach. That's according to everybody. Now, it is a little bit confusing, says Tosfos, because we tovel the glass in the mikvah nowadays in order to make usage of it because of its similarity to metal. That sounds more like the first approach than that of the Rav Ashi approach. But Tosfos says, look, as far as Tumah is concerned, so there's a debate between the Amoraim, how exactly, what category should glassware fall under. But vis-a-vis the halacha of toveling a kli that belonged to a non-Jew, that was manufactured by a non-Jew, and then we purchased it, in terms of that, there is no dispute whatsoever. It needs to be toveled in the mikvah. And also, somewhat of a misconception, when you tovel glass, you don't make a bracha. That's not true. When you tovel glass in the mikvah, you do make a bracha. Okay. Just I didn't want to be remiss. I wanted to make that point clearly. Let's continue in the Gemara. We are halfway down on the Amud. On to Zainam and Beis. V'idach Maihi. The Gemara wants to know, look, we went through Yud Ches Davar. Now, when we say we went through Yud Ches Davar, so we learned two in the Mishnayos and Shabbos, delousing and reading by a lantern on Friday night. We went through the nine of the Mishnah and Zavin. And the Gemara wants to know, as long as we're here, so let's now articulate some of the others as well. So far we've gone through now 11, and the Gemara now is going to be going through some of the other Yud Ches Davar, the nine. So here now we're going to be learning a Mishnah Mikvot. Samniach Kelim Tachas Etzino LeKabal Mehem Meg Shamim. So let's say I take a kli, put it under a pipe in order to collect rainwater. Okay, and we're back to now discussing Maim She'uvim. And as we already discussed yesterday, and we get to reiterate today, Maim She'uvim, if I have water that was put into a kli, and then I take that water and put it into the mikvah, and the mikvah did not have 40 sa'a. The amount of water in the mikvah was just under 40 sa'a. And the drawn water, the water that was in the kli now, brings the mikvah to a total of 40 sa'a. So this mikvah now is going to be pasul mikvah. And what we're learning together is now the halachas of what is considered maim she'uvim. So basically the basic idea of the Gemara is that the water has to be collected with the intent of collecting that water. If, let's say, the water organically fell into the kli and it wasn't done by human design, so this doesn't qualify as maim she'uvim. And so the Gemara over here is going to be teaching us a Mishnah in Mikvos and discussing now a Gzeirat Derabanan. If I put a kli under a pipe in order to collect the megshamim. Now the pipe itself is not considered a kli. Rashi over here writes very clearly that what happened is that the pipe was put into the ground and then subsequently hollowed out. This pipe is considered part and parcel of the ground. So the pipe itself is not a keli. But at the end of the pipe, there's a little bit of a depression. And what you could do is you could put a keli over there in order to collect the rainwater. And you did. So echa kelim gedolim ve'echa kelim katan ve'afilu klei avanim ve'klei adama u'chlei galalim poslim es ha-mikvah. And regardless of what the kli is made out of, even if the kli is made out of a material that's not going to be mekabel tumah, still regarding the halachas of maim she'uvim, as long as it's a kli, so that water qualifies as maim she'uvim. Echad ha-minich ve'echad ha-shochech divrei Beis Shammai. And Beis Shammai is of the opinion that whether I intentionally put the kli over there, or even if I unintentionally put the kli over there, the water that falls into that kli is going to qualify as maim she'uvim. Beis Hillel mitarim b'shocheach. And Beis Hillel says that if I put the kli there, but I put it there with an absence of intent, so then the water collected in that kli is going to be considered not maim she'uvim. And the Gemara now clarifies. Amar Rav Meir, Nimna v'Rabba Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. that Remeir is of the opinion that this is one of those examples where there was a vote and the halacha sided with Beis Shammai over that of Beis Hillel. Meaning, according to Remeir, this is one of Yud Ches Tavar. Now, Beis Shammai will agree that if you left the kli in a chatzer with no intention to collect the rainwater, so under those circumstances, he views that as something which is organic, and that water in that kli is not going to have the status of Maim She'uvim. Am Rav Yossi Adai Machlokes Bimkama, Medes Rav Yossi disagrees with Rav Meir in the following. He does not think that this is one of those cases where they voted on. He does not think that Beis Hillel ever capitulated to Beis Shammai. According to Rav Yossi, this is not one of the Yud Ches Davar. And the Gemara in just a moment is going to ask, according to Rav Yossi, that means that he's absent one of the Yud Ches Davar because he doesn't believe that this is one of them. The Gemara is going to ask that question in just a moment. But before we get there, let's just go back and revisit this machlokas. Amar Rav Mesharshia, Debei Rav Amre. Rav Mesharshia quotes Debei Rav, the yeshiva of Rav. And he now wants to fine-tune this machlokas that we just learned together regarding Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Hakol modim kishinichem b'shas kishur avim tameim b'shas pizur avim devrakol tahorim. The Gemara over here says, let's say I put the kli out there at a time where the clouds gathered, meaning it was raining, it clearly showed signs of raining. The clouds aggregated above, and it looks like it's going to rain. And I put a kli out there in order to collect the rainwater. So that is certainly, there is no dispute whatsoever. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are going to agree under those circumstances that it is l'ratzon, that I'm interested in collecting that kli, and therefore the collected rainwater has the status of Maim She'uvim. Lo nechlugu ela she'hinicham, I'm sorry, and if the kli was forgotten out there, i.e. it was a clear day, and then the kli was just simply left outside, and then subsequently clouds gathered, and then subsequently rained, that is considered an organic collection of the rainwater, and the water inside the kli does not have the status of Maim She'uvim. And there is no disagreement. Where is there a disagreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Lo nechlugu ela she'hinich b'shas kishur avim. We're talking about a case where the kli was left out there when the sky was dark and it looked like it was going to rain. V'nispazru. And then what happens is it didn't rain and the clouds scattered. And v'chazru v'niskashu. And subsequently, a new pattern of clouds formed. So mar sever bat l'machshavaso, mar sever lo bat l'machshavaso. And this is the fine-tuned understanding of the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, in that your original intent was certainly to collect the rainwater, but now that the weather pattern has changed, and the weather pattern now cleared up, and then the weather pattern changes again, do we work with your original machshava? Or do we say now with the new weather pattern, it basically resets your machshava? That, says the Gemara, is the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So basically the Gemara just simply fine-tuned the machlokas. Now the Gemara is going to ask the question that according to Rav Yossi, there was never any capitulation from the point of Beis Hillel to that of Beis Shammai. And this is not one of Yud Ches Davar, so Batzer Lahu. So now you are 18 minus 1. And one of the assumptions going into this entire sugya is that the number 18 is a given. So Amar Rav Nachman, Yitzhak Af Benos Kusim, Nidos Meir Sissam, Bo Bayam Gazru. The idea that Benos Kusim are going to have the status of being Anida, even from the time that they're born, Exera de Rabbanan, in order to create distance between the Jewish boys and the non-Jewish girls. So that was an institution that was part of Yud Ches Davar. So this is, according to Rav Yossi, the one that is going to be included in Yud Ches Davar, and apparently others disagree that this is not part of Yud Ches Davar. So that would be the, according to Rav Yossi, the one that gets us to the number 18. Let's just quickly recap the daf. We started with the majority of today's daf discussing glassware. We know that glassware is an institution. It was instituted by Shimon Shetach. That glassware is going to be subject to a tumah de rabbanan. Sorry, a quick correction. It was a tumah that was instituted by Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. Who instituted that glassware is going to be subject to kavalas tumah. They were the first of the zugos. We're talking about extraordinarily early Tanaim. So this institution, that glass is now going to be susceptible to Tumah. So does it follow the model of Tumas Cheres, Kli Cheres, or does it follow the model of Tumas Matichos? So in approach number one, which took up the entire Amud Aleph of today's Daf, so glassware is a bit of a hybrid. Fundamentally rooted as a Kli Cheres, but also given the Chumras of Kli Matichos. That is approach number one. And approach number two of the Gemara, which we started on the top of the Amud Beis, is Ravashi, is that no. Kli Zechuchis, glassware, is going to be following only like Kli Cheres, and the halachas of Kli Cheres are going to transfer over to the Kli Zechuchis. The notable distinction that that glassware is going to be Tameh from the outside, it can contract Tumah. When the Avatumah comes into contact with the external surface of it, that's only because of the see-through nature of the glass. That is the only reason why, in that particular halacha, notable exception. But fundamentally, it's like earthenware. The second discussion that we had in today's daf was regarding Tumah Yeshana, meaning that Shema Meshetach instituted if I were to break a kli, a metal kli, and then put it back together again, even though Me'ikar Adin, the Tumah went away, and then when I make it again, it should be Panim Chadashos, but nevertheless, as Gzera D'Rabbanan, the Tumah that once was before it was broken is just going to come right back and settle back on the kli once again. So why should that be? So the Gemara gave three different reasons why it is that the Chachamim made such a Gzera. Either it has to do with the fact that we don't want to forget about the procedure of the paraduma and the mechatas process in terms of being mitar from Tumas Meis. That's one approach. The second approach is that we're afraid that because breaking it and fixing it may be so expedient, that people may neglect using a mikvah altogether, or because of the erroneous conclusion that people will have is that if I break it and fix it, even though it can be used immediately and I don't have to wait for Harav Shemesh, people will think that I tovel in the mikvah, and people will then walk away erroneously thinking that all I need is to tovel in the mikvah and I don't have to wait for Harav Shemesh. So those are three different possibilities of the Gemara in terms of why the Chachamim instituted Tumah Yeshana. And finally, the last thing that we did is another one of the Yud Ches Davar, which is collecting rainwater and whether and when exactly that collected rainwater has the status of Maim She'uvim. Everyone agrees that if a kli was forgotten out when there was no chance of rain, and rainwater ends up going into that kli, so that is not considered a collection ladas, and that is not considered Maim Shuvim. Everyone agrees that if I put the kli out there as the weather was definitely forecasting rain, and then it did rain, and the rain collected in it, so under those circumstances, that certainly has the status of Maim Shuvim, and it's just now a question of what happens when it looked like it rained, I put the kli out there, and then it didn't rain, and then it cleared, and then once again the weather pattern changed and it started raining. So do we work with your original machshava or do you not? And the Gemara says that's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Adkan.